All right, Steve, happy Monday. How are you doing?
Good, real good. It's exciting. We're just chatting here. Death hikes a week and a half away. Just I'm going on 2 days of rest, which I feel like I could climb Mount Everest right now. Feel great. So that's awesome. How about you?
Yeah, feeling pretty good. We were just chatting and getting through details, and it was like, oh man, we have stuff to do. We better start this podcast. But yeah, feeling pretty good. I did repeats on Saturday and was able to get 5,500 feet of gain, which, for Missouri is like
Incredible.
just like massive monotonous repeats for 4 hours. But yeah, it was good, felt good, and I'm excited. I'm just really curious to see how the body's going to hold up, but I'm like hungry to just be there, enjoy the Grand Canyon, and find that sweet spot of suffering in a way.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Well, we did a listener question, and I know, again, we're going to have more after the death hike on details and how it goes, obviously, and logistics and what did work and didn't work and all that. But in advance of it, a two-part question came through on footwear. One is, this guy said, I was wondering what shoes or boots you guys are wearing for the upcoming death hike and what you would recommend for a lightweight early season elk hunting footwear choice. And then he said, I believe on the Monday Minute 214, Steve mentioned wearing ultras. What shoe is he talking about? And when this guy spelled ultra, it was ULTRA, like ultra marathon, for example. So a few things in there. What are we wearing for death hike? What would we recommend for early season elk hunting footwear? And then I guess we should clarify exactly what ultras are that you mentioned, Steve.
Yeah, go and just jump forward here in a couple of weeks. I've already been outlining how for the experience project, basically the video I want to shoot, just talking about shoes and everything that I've learned from like what I'm looking for in features, the types of hunt where the shoe would change, the conditions where a shoe would change. Certainly there's not it's gonna be like tents and tarps. Like there's not one thing that I would just have. You need a little bit of an arsenal to vary up depending on the conditions and terrain that you're going to be in. So for the death hike this year, I'm wearing Altra, which is ALTRA. They're temps. And last year, I wore a company called Topo Athletic. They had a Mountain Racer 2, which I believe, Mark, you bought a pair.
I did. I'm
You
planning on using them for the death hike this year.
are using them. Perfect. So I had those last year. Had absolutely fantastic results, but they discontinued them, and I've got I had two pairs last year, but they've got a lot of miles on them now, so they're kind of beat up. And I did order their Mountain Racer 3, the new version of them, but they just didn't quite work for me. Like a little too much room in the foot box. Yeah, so Ultra Temps for me, I guess. And then you're wearing Topo Mountain Racer 2s, which are discontinued. How those been going? Good.
Yeah, they have been. I found the twos, yeah, the old model, and I found them on closeout in my size and bought a couple pairs. And I was like, oh, I'll try one and then I'll know fairly quick if the other one's going to work and whether I want to keep a second pair or not. And they're doing good. So I was able to pick them up for s super cheap. But yeah, for me, they have a good level of foot box room. I know you said the Ultra Threes were almost too much. But for that's one thing I keep in mind with the death hike in particular is just knowing how much time we're going to be on our feet and knowing that there will be some swelling, right? So the ultras and the topos do have a wider toe box and that more, I don't know if they call it anatomical fit, but it shapes your foot. Like your foot's wider up front, narrow in the back, and both of those shoes have more of a shape like that. The topos I'm running are a 5 millimeter drop, and then the ultras that you're running, Steve, are a pure zero drop, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. So that's a little bit
How
of a
about,
difference there.
yeah, how about insoles? Do you swap it out or you just run in stock?
I have messed with stock, the Superfeet, It's so annoying to me that they changed their names. Dang it, Steve.
I know, I know.
The Super Feet, what used to be Hike Adept Max, I think they just call the cushion now. And then what they used to call the Super Feet Trailblazers, which I don't know what they call now, but I've messed with all three. They've all worked well on training hikes. I obviously just don't have the opportunity yet to have 50 plus hours on my feet like at one time in them. But I will be running probably those Super Feet cushion, I think what they call the cushion now, hike cushion.
Nice.
And part of that was going back to the fact that it is a roomier shoe. I had more room to run more of an insole. The Super Feet aren't, they don't take a ton of volume, but definitely more volume than the stock insole. And it just seemed to work really well. So I'm planning
Yeah.
that. See
Nice.
how it
Yeah, that's
goes.
exactly what I've not. I wouldn't say not, but there's been few examples of shoes I've put those Adapt-Hike Max insoles in and not had better performance. And yeah, specifically to those Mountain Racer 2s, there's so much volume in there. They were almost required for me to keep my foot kind of locked in and from sliding around inside the shoe.
Yeah. And one thing I'm playing with this year, which I haven't done in year, I've done it on previous death hikes. I don't typically do it hunting, but I have been using a really thin Injinji liner sock, which Injinji, they make the toe socks. So it's a super thin liner toe sock, and I'm running that under a darn tough sock. And I think I may go with it. Again, for me, it's more of like swelling and long term of just trying to keep those toes happy and
Yeah.
prevent hot spots and things like that.
Yeah, I did that last year where I ran because there's a little bit of extra room in the shoe when it was flat or on trail, I would run just the like a Darn Tough. And then when I was going to get real technical and lots of side hill and stuff like that, where the foot could be, sliding around inside the shoe, then I would actually double up the socks and do exactly what you did. I had some and Gingy toe socks, put those on, put a thinner Darn Tough over the top of it. Just what I had, and that worked out fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, cool. I didn't realize you did that.
Yep.
Nice. Well, yeah, a lot more to come. You said Steve video recap
Yeah.
of the death hike, and then obviously
Yeah.
footwear is one of the big topics for the experience project content that we'll be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So in general, elk, early season elk hunting, it's just a pit. I mean, there's almost you can't answer that question without a ton of information from the person. Where are they hunting? Because you can early season, you could truly, and I've done everything. You could run, eight-inch leather boot, or you could run these ultra temps. I'm gonna run on the death hike. Depends on where you're at, and the only reason I wouldn't run these temps is certain areas are really boggy, to where you're just in water a lot. I did do that last year. I ran those Mountain Racer 2s with, I remember talking about this, with waterproof socks, and that was a freaking awesome combination. I was really surprised how well they performed even when it got like 70 degrees in the afternoon. But there's just so many variables that I think it's to answer that, like every single person would be like an individual, like not only your hunt style, the shape and of your foot, the type of terrain you're hunting in, whether it's rocky or just dirt or really mossy, say your Oregon coast or something like that, what you prefer, how your ankle, I mean, there's just so many variables in that that I think at the end of the day, the message is, if you have uncomfortable feet, don't stop, right? Like you should not have blisters. The first thing you do when you get back to your truck or back to your camp should not be, oh my gosh, I can't wait to take these shoes or boots off, right? You need to keep looking, keep trying, because you should absolutely not have your feet be that painful after a day of hunting.
Yeah, for me, early season archery elk in particular, again, I will make changes based on forecast, terrain, what I think I'm going into. My default of this is most likely is something like the Salomon X Ultra Mid. It's a pretty lightweight trail runner-ish hybrid with a boot. I really, really like that boot for early season archery elk, but if it's as you said, if I'm know I'm going to somewhere like super boggy, a lot wetter, there's good chances of like more early snow, that type of thing. That may change to more of a traditional boot, but for me, that's kind of the on average default go-to for early archery elk. All right. Next topic, bows. Good question from Marty. He wrote in and said he's getting back into archery hunting and dusting off his old PSC that he got back, or he says way back in the early 2000s with like a smiley winky face. And then he said, I cannot really tune this bow. There's no mods available, and I've been looking at upgrading. While a flagship bow would be great, I find it hard to justify the cost of flagship bows of today when last year's models are still great options with a significant cost reduction. How would the EXO team tackle the process of finding and potentially trying some previous year's flagship bows? So, good question. Obviously, a scenario where if you walk into a bow shop, you can try a bunch of bows, but it's all going to be, in general, this year's bows. So he's saying, hey, you can save a lot of money if you don't buy a brand new bow, but what's the best way to try them? And I think he's approaching this well. I mean, he's shooting a 20-year-old bow, and if he goes to a 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe even 10-year-old bow, I feel like he's still going to get an improvement, but he doesn't necessarily have to drop the big coin on today's flagship bow either.
No, yeah, and there's, I think we talked about this a little bit while back too, but like, yeah, a bow between 2000 and 2010, there was a lot of improvements and changes from 2010 to 2024. Man, it's been, you could easily hand me a 2000, whatever I was shooting in 2010, and I'd be completely happy to take that out and go hunt tomorrow with it. Like, maybe it's a slightly more vibration, slightly louder. But half of that you could probably, counteract with, rubber dampeners and things like that. Man, that's a really good question. The one glaring issue with the bow world right now is that every bow company has set themselves up to every single year they have to spit out the latest and greatest bow, right? And just kind of a marketing slash selling slash customer demand vicious cycle that needs to be stopped because they're making good bows, but certainly there can be hit and miss. A Hoyt, R, you could just pick any random number, I guess, but of the RX series, like, they've you can go backwards. Like, some of them are harder to tune, right? Like, even though it's the next year's model, they had issues with them. So I would start with one, if you're buying used, there's going to be a lot of information out there on forums. Problem with forums is you don't know who the guy is behind the keyboard typing that. But you could start to get a general feeling, of, all right, I'm looking up this, PSE model from, 2018 or something like that, and just start digging around and seeing what the reviews are. Avoid any of the published ones because they're all just crap as far as like an online magazine or something like that, right? Like, they're not going to actually be critical or go into any real aspect of the bow. So find forums where you have real people talking about their experiences with it. And then also, I'd go to your best bet there is going to be go to an archery shop that knows what they're doing and that sells those bows. So go to a PSE dealer and talk to the bow techs and say, hey, what, I'm looking at this bow, how did it tune? Did you have issues with it? Just ask those kind of questions because they know, like, they're, some bows are like a freaking Tacoma, right? Like, they just run, and they just tune easily. They shoot well. And other bows are like, oh yeah, don't buy that one. That was a hunk of crap, right? Again, it could have been the PSE model that's from 2019 or 2020, right? They just, because the bow companies are pushing so hard and so fast with new designs, not every single one's perfect. And bows are, can be very finicky. So As far as going and trying them, that doesn't exist. Like, you're just going to have to do your internet research, talk to some archery shops, talk to the guy who's actually the tech there, who's actually working on tuning the bows for customers, and find one that you think's good, and then settle on that and just start, digging around in Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist or wherever until you find a good used one. But
Yeah.
he's absolutely right. There's, zero reason to buy the latest and greatest bow. I said, in general, the improvements are so marginal that it doesn't matter, and sometimes they can even be go backwards.
Yeah, I like that idea of going to the bow shop, talking to a tech. What it made me think of is this question of asking them, like, say they're a, some shops are pretty, I don't want to say brand exclusive, but they're known for, like, we are a
Yeah.
X and X dealer, right? Like, we do PSEs mostly or whatever. But ask that guy, like, hey, what do you think the best PSE bow of the last 10 years has been, right? And I bet
Yeah,
you'd get a solid answer. And do that to, like, a Matthews guy, do that to a Hoyt guy. And then at least from there, you're like, okay, take all the big names, even some of the smaller names, and, like, what's their best bow of the last 10 years? And narrow down on that. And then pair that with, like, as you said, internet research and stuff like that. And then I think in terms of trying stuff, I mean, this totally depends on what type of community you have around you. But I mean, one thought is this guy writing in his 2000s PSE, like, go take that thing to an archery shoot. I don't know, like, whether it's 3D or something else, but while you're there, be like, hey, what are you guys shooting? Or maybe you can try something. And in general, you're going to get probably some more. Again, he's a hunter, so I would focus on a more hunting related shoot, like with more of a 3D shoot, more of a club casual shoot than like the diehard competition world, because you're probably not going to get access to as many bows as, you're interested in for this hunting purpose. But that could be a way to, you're at the shoot and this guy has his 5-year-old Hoyt or Matthews or whatever. He's like, oh man, I love this thing so much. Like, I've tried newer bows, but I'm sticking with my 5, 7, 8-year-old bow because I love it so much. Like, pay attention to that. Pay attention to the guy who is on purpose still shooting the same bow, not because he can't afford another one, because whatever, but just because he loves that thing, right? So pay attention to those things. Like, what are those bows that people are still shooting? And that there's a reason that they're doing that in a lot of cases. Good question, though.
Yeah, great question.
So on weapon stuff, we've also had this question come through more on the rifle side, and he wrote and said, I hear people say that you should spend as much on your rifle scope as you do your rifle, but I see very few people actually do that. And I would agree. I've heard that. I see very few people do it. He said, if you didn't balance the budget 50-50, though, would you rather have a $500 rifle with a $1,500 scope or a $1,500 scope with a $500 optic? Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting one. I probably honestly would, if he forced me to choose, like, have a better optic on a cheaper rifle, rather than spend more money on a rifle and have it be compromised by an optic that I just can't trust, really. So I do think it is important to invest in an optic and realize what a critical component that is of your rifle system. But what that question really made me think of, Steve, and we've talked, and this whole idea of budget, and obviously, I have a super great custom rifle and have done a lot of other things over the years and upgraded Tikkas and all that. And all the custom stuff's great, but it really made me think of, this question spit out $1,500 and $500. So roughly a $2,000 budget, right? And it just made me think, like, what is most important? And I think it is hard to say, like, flat figures of $2,000, because I think at the end of the day, most hunters and all of us on a budget, we have a budget for now, but we also know that maybe over time, next year I'm going to have another $500 or $1,000 or whatever to buy something. So I don't love the idea of these fixed budgets, because what's most realistic is I have a fixed budget right now, but I also know that I can continue to, invest and upgrade and whatnot over time. And I've always made this argument, like, say, for example, when I did build that Tika and upgrade it over time versus a full custom, one of the primary reasons I like this idea of upgrading over time is because you do spread out the budget. You may end up spending, 3, 4, 5 grand in 5 years, but you don't have to do that up front. And maybe you don't have to do that at all because you're figuring out over time, like, what to me is actually worth upgrading. And so I was just thinking, for me, in order of priority, like you said, I'm gonna, quote unquote, build a rifle or get a really nice rifle between now and 5 years from now. What does that order of priority look like? And to me, I would go buy a Tika and start there. And then Tikas, you can upgrade super cheap but reliably and do like a trigger spring thing there for like $15, and it really does make a difference. So that would be the next thing I would do. Factory Tika, $15 trigger spring. And then from there, and this is where people get off base, I think my second real main thing I would invest in would be actually feeding this rifle, having some ammunition, and actually being able to shoot the thing. And then from there, I would go to an optic. And maybe that's where you stop, right? So if you had 2 grand, like Tika, some ammo, and an optic, and that's where I would spend my 2 grand, in that order. And then from there, stock or chassis or suppressor or whatever, like that could all be future years, future money spent if you get to the point. But yeah, that's kind of how I look at it on the rifle side of things, if you're working with a budget, for sure.
Yeah, like you're spot on with, nobody. I've got a $2,000 budget, and I think you want to look at the long term goal of, the long term picture of what that's going to look like. Because yeah, you're probably not going to, if you do buy a $500 rifle scope, you're not going to, you're going to want to upgrade that at some point, and maybe just knowing that if that is your budget, that's fine to begin with. The I'll have you so that Shoot to Hunt podcast, there's a guy that named Form on there that gets on and talks about rifle stuff. I'll have you link to it, because he basically talked on, I believe it was like Why You Miss. I can't remember what the subject of the podcast was, but it essentially just broke down why you miss. And number one, if I remember this correctly, or these first two I do anyways. Number one, shooter. Obviously, shooter. Like your gun's way more accurate and capable than you are. Probably 98 out of 100 times you're gonna miss is because you screwed up, right? So number one would be, regardless of what rifle you have and how much you spend, if you don't go out and practice and get proficient at shooting in the mountains, it's all moot point. Like you'd have a $100 Walmart gun or a $10,000 custom gun, you're still gonna miss just as badly if you never shoot your gun and never practice. Number two was the rifle scope losing zero, which absolutely makes sense to me. You're out there in the mountains, you fall, rifle, even if it's just on your pack, but just kind of hits the ground, bam, you go to shoot, you were like, oh, I missed by, I was 2 feet high. You go back to the range, bam, you're hitting high. So I would say, and in order of importance, those would be the two things from my view: practice and then having a good rifle scope, and obviously along with that are the rings that you're mounting the scope to the gun with, making sure that those are bulletproof so that when you are in the mountains and you have, you slip, that your gun's going to hold at zero. Whether your gun shoots a quarter MOA or one MOA, I think is probably very rarely why you ever miss. So high level, that would be what I would focus on.
And
And
that's why, like, unintentionally, because I didn't know you say that, but that's why I say like ammo and optic,
yeah.
because if you have a $2,000 or even a $5,000 budget for that matter, if you drop all that on your rifle and you're not actually using the thing or shooting the thing, or you choose the cartridge with the crazy expensive or hard to find or unpleasant to shoot, experience, and you're not shooting it, it does not freaking matter how good that rifle is. Because it's all in your hands as a shooter. And if you're not using it and shooting and doing that with any level of consistency to develop the skills, nothing else matters.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, I'd say if you are, I think, what's a Tika? $800?
I think so.
I don't know.
Yeah,
$750 like
to $850.
I mean, yeah. So if you got a $2,000, yeah, you could still get a nice scope on there. And I guess what I was gonna say, if I were running a cheaper rifle scope, I would probably just more frequently shoot when I'm out there in the mountains on a hunt. Mm-hmm. You're in a canyon, you know, where you're worried about, you think maybe you bumped your rifle or whatever, but there's like, yeah, there's probably not any deer or elk in here or whatever. Just shoot a rocket 300 yards across the hill. Double check your zero. Okay. Still good to go. Right. Mm-hmm. I did that a bunch on my Frank Church sheep hunt, right? Cause it was just, you're flying in an airplane, you're beating it up. And, it's like, okay, we're down here at the airstrip. I'm going to check my zero real quick. Good to go. It just absolutely hurts nothing to do that. So I would do that and then have a long-term goal of looking for a better rifle scope.
Yeah.
If you were in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, to the point, if you start with a Tika, say it's $800, and say you do start with a $500 scope, back to the original context of this question, what's the first thing of those two? If I was going to upgrade one, what's the first thing I'm going to upgrade? Am I going to spend 15 or $2,000 on a rifle and upgrade for my Tika? Or am I going to spend $1,500 or whatever, which you don't have to do, by the way, on the scope and upgrade for my $500 scope? It's going to be the scope every single time.
Hey, you already own a Tika? Yeah, go freaking.
Yes.
Yeah. Go get a good scope on it and call it good. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, well, the definition of good scope is something interesting for sure.
Yeah. Well, you, I meant
that needs to be covered in more depth. Yeah.
Yeah, I meant to come back to this. You mentioned Form, and he's been on the Shoot to Hunt podcast, and for people who are aware, on Rock Slide and whatnot. And we've had people reach out to us about some of the stuff he's discussed and even potentially getting him on the show. And yes, that will happen. To back up, like, you know him, Steve, met him. Yeah, we're aware of who he actually is because Forum's not his real name. And there's like this mystery cloud on the internet. Yes, it will happen. So more to look forward to there. But yeah, a lot of great stuff. Steve, super excited about the experience project content on really more of what we talked about today, more rifle stuff, more footwear stuff, getting more into the details, recapping the death hike. There's a whole bunch of good stuff coming. Just to give you guys a quick heads up, this week on the podcast, Wednesday, we are releasing an episode with Colorado Parks and Wildlife. So early in the year, we did all those state agency series. I have been trying to schedule Colorado for like 2 months. It finally happened. I just chatted with them last week, and I'm going to get that episode out ASAP for you guys. So that's coming Wednesday. And then on Friday, I'm going to have a bonus episode as well with Brandon from Silencer Central. And we just had a bunch of Q&A on silencers and suppressors and really the process. And there has been, especially here recently, a lot of changes and questions. So there's been some craziness happening with suppressor approvals taking only a few days and wild stuff like that. So we're going to get into all that. And really this whole Q&A on Friday with Brandon from Silencer Central is we 100% just covered your listener questions. So two more episodes, two great episodes, honestly, coming this week. So be sure to stay tuned for that. Just make sure to hit subscribe or follow in your podcast app to get those. And then as always, if you have anything for us, just send an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. It'd be great to hear from you. And we'll talk to you soon.